Yo, what's good, everybody? What's good? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah Kid Podcast. Welcome back. We're at the top of the year, January 1st, 2024. Happy New Year's to everyone that is listening. Shouts out to everyone. We're in a new year. Same pod. You guys know what we're getting into. So this is, as I already told you guys, I dropped an episode. Weirdly enough, it was my last episode of 2023 and my first episode of 2024, all kind of mixed together. So you guys can go check that out. I dropped it at the top of the morning. You guys can go check that out. It's out. I give my thoughts and reaction to the Lions-Cowboys game and Russell Wilson getting benched. But I wanted to include some more NFL content, but then some college football stuff. Because we obviously, you know, we have the college football playoff tonight. And I'm going to give you my thoughts. I'm going to give you my predictions on both games, the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl. But I also wanted to touch on a little something that happened on Sunday and so forth with the NFL games. And I felt like it'll just be too much conjunction. So I'm making two separate episodes. This is part two. So if you guys do want to check out, you want to check out what I had, my thoughts on the Cowboys Lions, right? You want to check that out, my reaction. You want to hear what I had to say about Russell Wilson. You guys can do that. But if you're already listening to this episode, you might as well just stay. You might as well just listen to this episode, get my predictions and my thoughts on the college football playoff, and then at the conclusion of this episode, you can go check out part one. But this is part two. And I don't know why I'm saying part two. Like, part one, part two insinuates that you need to listen to part one in order to listen to part two. But you don't. You don't. You can listen to part two as is. This can be your part one. Doesn't matter. But first and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kidd of the Isaiah Kidd Podcast, the IKP. Shouts out to everyone that has been rocking with us from last year to this year. Shouts out to the new listeners that we're going to acquire this year. Shouts out to everyone that has been spreading the pod, sharing the pod, and so forth. You guys probably get two more episodes this week. I'm not even gonna lie. You probably get two more episodes this week. Because I need to talk about, obviously, you guys are gonna get my reaction to the playoff games and so forth. Who knows? But I want to start Michigan, Alabama, and these two teams are, I feel like in both of these games, Michigan, Alabama, and then Texas, Washington, both of these games are going to look different. I think with Bama, and we'll get to Texas and Washington, but at first with Bama and Michigan, the Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all, it is going to, both teams play a style of football where they limit possessions. That's why, like, hence the over under is at 44 and a half points. I think Michigan is favored by 1.5. So over under is 44 and a half points. So that right there kind of tells you, you know, this game is going to be, I don't know if either team makes it to 30. Maybe the winner makes it to 30. I don't know. But both teams play a style of football that it just limits possessions. They're able to, like, you know, play ball control. You're going to see this is going to be like the trenches. A lot of the trenches play is going to matter. Who can dominate what offensive line and so forth, right? And with Michigan, I feel like you know what you're getting. They have been, I will say, the most consistent team in college football throughout the country this year. I think they have been the most consistent. You know what you're getting. They're going to run the ball. They're going to try to run the ball first effectively. At times this year, it has been their thing that they hang their hat on. But then sometimes J.J. McCarthy, he's had to make some plays and so forth in the passing game. There's been instances where you have seen that style from Michigan. But Michigan is going to want to establish the running game. And I think Michigan, I'm going to say they should win this game. They should win this game. This is the best version of Harbaugh and what he has been able to build at Michigan. This is the best version of Michigan that Harbaugh has built. I think last year's team, their secondary could have been a little bit better. They struggled to stop the pass. I think the 2021 version of Michigan, I didn't think they had enough vertical play down the field, being able to stretch the ball down the field. I think this year they have a little bit of everything. Now, they don't have, like, the dynamic receivers like a Marvin Harrison Jr. or a Keon Coleman or Malik Nabers or a Romo Dusek. Like, they don't have that type of vertical threat outside guy. Like, they don't have that. But they can throw the football around and move the ball through the air if need be. But that's not what they do. They run the football and they suffocate you. They get you down, they suffocate you, and they take all of the win out of you. That's how Harbaugh and Michigan, that's how they play. Now, with Bama, on the other hand, they have not been as consistent from week one to now. They had their roller coaster, it's been bumpy. Obviously we know about the whole quarterback situation where they didn't really have a starter coming into the year. Jalen Milroe transfers late. He gets benched. The other guys play. He comes back. But now over the past month and a half or so, I would say of the season, Bama kind of found their groove. They know identity wise, they know who they are. And they have kind of they're probably the hottest team going into the playoff. If you look at, you know, the strides that they have taken, the teams that they have had to beat in order to get to this spot, like a Georgia, they are hitting their stride at the right time, I would say. And with Harbaugh, let's go back to Michigan. So that's just an outlook on both teams and where they are. Now, Harbaugh at Michigan, he struggled in these bowl games, right? And more times than not, in these bowl games, he's had to play SEC teams. Now, it's just going to be fascinating to watch because I don't know how much implications it has on this exact game, but the Big Ten has struggled this year with the SEC in terms of bowl games. Right, like the SEC has been pretty solid in bowl season thus far. Now, like I said, I'm not gonna say that, you know, the SEC and Big Ten matchups that we have seen so far in the bowl games, I'm not gonna say they have implications for this. No, but you know, I feel like there is, you know, Harbaugh, I think, can get a little tight. I think there's a multitude of reasons as to why Michigan and Harbaugh have kind of struggled over the past couple of years in these bowl games, or really since his entire tenure at Michigan. But it would be remiss me to say, and Harbaugh's done a great job in Michigan. I have backed them. Even the times where it has looked rough, I have backed them. But pre-COVID at Michigan is a little bit different than post-COVID Harbaugh at Michigan, because post-COVID, Michigan has been an absolute power. They have been an absolute power. They have beaten Ohio State 3 straight times. They have won the Big Ten 3 straight times. They have found themselves in this same predicament for now 3 straight years. they have gotten to the college football playoff. And like I said, I think this is their, I think this is his most complete team. He has, I think about like, probably has like 15 to 18 NFL guys maybe that can get drafted possibly, right? And it's just, this isn't the juggernaut that Bama usually is in these type of spots, right? Like, Saban has brought this team a long way. I tend to believe that bowl games sometimes reward clever coaching. And I think this is one of the several reasons as to why I think Michigan struggles. Harbaugh is he's a routine type of guy. When I think of clever coaching, I think of a guy like Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer, really good in bowl games. Historically, really good in bowl games. Part of it is his clever, you know, being aggressive, wit, you know, has a wit about himself. Saban, he can, you give Saban a month to prepare. You give him 3-4 weeks to prepare. Saban is 9-4 in the college football playoff era. He can come up with some really good game plans strategically in that time being. Harbaugh is a routine guy. He's a stickler for routine. So I think in certain ways, it kind of hinders his bowl success because, like I said, historically, you think about coaches that have had success in bowl games and, you know, their bowl record looks fine. Like I said, a guy like Urban Meyer, he's really good in bowl games. And I think some of that is due to the wit and the cleverness and the creativity that sometimes come with coaching in a bowl game. Now, interesting enough, like I said, I think another aspect that I want to touch on, Michigan, as I said, they have dominated everyone that they have played so far. But their two biggest wins, Penn State, Ohio State. Like I said, I don't know the implications of it, but if I were to tell you, the day after Michigan beat Ohio State and the day after Bama beat Auburn, and I ask you, okay, what if these two teams actually played in a bowl game? Who are you choosing? I think it would be a resounding answer of, oh, it's Michigan. But I think we're, we're now seeing, I think those wins, Michigan's most impressive wins haven't really materialize and age well. Penn State got their ass handed to them by Tulane. Ohio State scored 3 points in their loss versus Mizzou. And granted, Ohio State, their quarterback transferred, but still, 3 points, right? And I'm looking at Bama, their latest win versus Georgia. I think a lot of people are going into this game and saying, hey, Bama, I like the development of their team, their process. They've come a long way. And for me, as I go into this game, obviously, I'm sure both teams will be coached up to par. I think the bad version of Bama, like, for instance, versus Auburn, like Jalen Milroe wasn't great. Auburn gave a lot of trouble for Bama on the run game. Now, Bama, the week after that, they played Georgia. Bama really did a good job with handling the run game. I think schematically thinking, Michigan's run game is very much similar to how Georgia runs the football versus Auburn. Now, that's going to be an interesting development. Like I said, this game is going to be won within the trenches. And it's going to be, hey, obviously Michigan wants to run the football. Last time we saw Michigan run the football or try to, they didn't do a good job versus Iowa in the Big Ten championship game. They were only averaging about 2 yards per carry. So Bama, you know, got to fill in these gaps. Michigan typically likes to run the football on the strong side. I'm sure Saban and he's going to have that defense prepped up and suited and booted and ready to go. I think this game is going to come down to J.J. McCarthy happening to make some plays, whether it's with his arm or his legs. I think it's going to be a mixture of both that's going to be needed, because I think in tonight's game, I think you get a good version or one of the best versions of this Bama team. It's hard for me to imagine you give Saban damn near a month to prepare. They're coming off of the Georgia victory. It's just hard for me to imagine Bama not coming out and not schematically being ready. Now, whether or not they win or lose, but I think schematically, scheme-wise, and from a game planning perspective, I can't see Bama not being ready. And I think this game is going to be a lot closer than what some may anticipate. I think the spread is close because of the Saban effect. I'm going to say this. I think from a talent perspective, Michigan has the edge. But if Bama's able to muddy up the game and they're able to stop the run, obviously, but then Michigan, if they can exploit Michigan's pass protection kind of nicks, Bama has a really good chance. I'm going to go with Michigan with a final score of 27-23. I think Michigan wins it by 4. But I think this game is really close. And like I said, I think this game is going to be one within the trenches. I like Michigan's defense of versatility. I thought last year they can stop the run, but the secondary was kind of shaky. I think this year you're getting a more well-balanced Michigan defense. And like I said, I think scheme-wise, I think Bama offensively and defensively are going to be ready. But I'm going to go with Michigan. I feel like I know what I'm getting. I know what I'm getting into. They've been more consistent, and I think they feel like the more complete team. So I'm going to go with Michigan. And let's go on to Texas and Washington in the Sugar Bowl. And I feel like Texas, in a lot of areas, Texas is favored. But in a lot of areas, I think Texas is better than Washington. But I've been banging on myself because I'm like, I said the same thing about Oregon. I thought Oregon was better than Washington in a lot of areas. I am not going to make that mistake again. I'm going to say this. Washington's passing game is amazing. That is their best element to their team. The quarterback, and obviously they have great coaching with DeBoer. But in terms of players, they have a really good passing game. It is an immaculate passing game. And it's not out of necessarily their OC is good. Like I said, their coaching is really good. It's a passing game, and it's dynamic just with simple drop back style. And it just consists of space and leverage and the talent that they have on the outside. That's just what it is. It ain't like it's not set up by the run or play action. There's no trickery. No, they just drop back. It's a drop back style led with spacing and leverage, and they have phenomenal talent on the outside. Like I said, Romo Dunze, Jalen McCollum, they have phenomenal talent on the outside, and you give Penix a clean pocket, he's really good. I think for me, his pro comp is Tua. When I look at Penix, I see a lot of Tua, Both obviously both of them are left-handed, but in turn, like when you give Tua a clean pocket and then you give him these weapons and then you give him like a genius play caller slash play designer, you get a guy that can, you know, what Tua has become. He's been solid. And that's Penix. Penix, I think his arm is a little bit more lively than Tua's, but you get the gist. You give him a clean pocket, he can make the throws. He can make all of the throws. He can make all of the throws. Now, I know a lot of people, like, if you're pro-Texas, right, you're like, well, can Washington handle Texas physicality up front? And I know a lot of people are like, well, no, because Washington is a finesse team. And we think about, like I said, their drop back explosive passing game. But no, I would disagree respectfully. I think Washington can handle Texas physicality play. You know why? Because I seen them handle Oregon's physicality play in the Pac-12 championship and in the regular season. I seen them do it twice. And I thought the same thing. Coming into the Pac-12 championship, I was like, I don't know if Washington, physicality-wise, in the trenches, can just match up with Oregon for another 48 minutes. Or I just didn't think so. I didn't think they can match, or 60 minutes, excuse me. I misspoke. For another 60 minutes. I didn't think they'd be able to do it. Well, I'd be damned. Washington goes out. They can run the ball. They can all. That's the thing about. That's why I like about Kalen DeBoer, and I have pushback on like some of these younger offensive minded coaches where it's really pass happy, and they throw the ball, and it's really finesse. The thing that I like that has gravitated to me when it comes to Washington is they have this, like, there is a balance to me where they can throw the football. They got the number one passing offense in the country. They can throw the football with the best of them. But when it's time to get down and dirty, they do have, like, a throwback element to them, and they show they can run the ball. For instance, versus Oregon in that Pac-12 championship game, guess what? Washington held the ball 13 minutes in that first quarter. They held the ball for 13 minutes in the first quarter of that Pac-12 championship game. And it came with ball control, being able to control the line of scrimmage and run the football. And that was versus Dan Lanning's Oregon defense. That was versus Dan Lanning's Oregon defense. So if you are questioning whether or not Washington can compete with Texas in the trenches and their physicality, I think you better think otherwise, because they have shown it on multiple occasions versus Oregon that has like a similar style of play with the physicality up front and the line play. They have shown they can do it. They can do it really well. That's not their go-to, right? That's not what they necessarily lean their hat on. But if you want to do that, they can do that. Now, And here's why I say Washington, I think they could present a lot of issues, because, as I said, I think Texas in a lot of areas, I think overall they may have a better team in certain areas than Washington. But Texas' biggest weakness is their secondary. And I'm sure that Washington is going to feast on that, and that will be a problem. And as I told you guys, as I broke down the Michigan game, this game right here, this game, unlike the Michigan game, the over and under is 66 points, 66 and a half points. So both teams, I think, definitely gets to 30. Now, let me come from an aspect of Texas. I think the Texas offense will be really interesting to watch, because as I talked about with Saban, you give Saban an amount of time to do so, put together a good game plan. I think Bama will be a good version of themselves. I think this Texas offense, you give Sark the amount of time that they have had off to game plan and scheme up and dial up some things, I think this Texas offense will be clicking. I think the Texas offense will be clicking. And Sark, I talked about it previously, I think bowl games have a way with rewarding creativity and clever coaching. And Sark, I think he has a knack. With in terms of play calling, he has a knack for putting the pedal to the metal and just wowing you with the play calling and just the designs. And you kind of saw it versus Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, and you saw it versus Bama early in the year, where the play calling, like Sark, you give Sark some time, he can dial some shit up. Like Sark, like, and DeBoer, I'm sure there's going to be a really good coaching matchup, because I'm sure Kalen DeBoer will be ready and he'll have his Huskies ready to play. But Sark offensively, with this offense and these weapons, he's going to be able to dial some shit up too. And Washington, you know, their defense is ranked 93rd. I think some of the statistics out there on Washington defense can be a little skewed, because I did see a high-powered Oregon offense struggle to kind of move the ball initially. And then at some point, Oregon got it going. And I think Texas, you'll see that same thing where Texas, I think they will have it going and they will be clicking offensively. Now, they're missing Jonathan Brooks. That injury's been huge. It will be huge. It'll be missed. Now, you would think with them missing Jonathan Brooks, the running game kind of has taken a step back. It hasn't. Texas has still been able to run the football effectively. The thing with Jonathan Brooks that was so crucial and key is, I guess, his versatility. His versatility, not just being able to run the ball down the field, but also he gave you options in terms of the passing game. They used him a lot, and they utilized him a lot in the passing game. So he brings that versatility. And not to say that these other guys can't have that element, that I think that's what makes the Jonathan Brooks injury a little is huge, because of that element that he brings. So I think this will be a scoring fest. I think both teams definitely score 30 plus points. I see why neither coach wouldn't put their, like, I'm sure both coaches are gonna, they ain't gonna hesitate to put their offenses out there. So I question if Texas would be able to generate enough pressure to slow down Washington's passing game, because that secondary of Texas scares me. It scares me. I want to lean with Texas bad. I think Sark has done a really good job this year with resurrecting and bringing this program back to life. Texas, you can officially say that they are back. This has been huge. They won the Big 12, as they should. They got to the playoff. This is a huge game, huge moment. Like I said, I think over the past, you know, I've been watching this Texas team a lot this year. They start off really, really fast. Sark's teams come out really fast. But at times, they hit a cold streak. They will not be able to afford to hit a cold streak versus Washington if they want to win this game. But I'm gonna slightly lean with Washington. I think Washington wins this game. I'm gonna go 45-41, like 45-40. I'm gonna go 45-40. Washington, like I said, I think both teams are going to be able to move the ball offensively really well. I'm just not sure. I think Washington can handle Texas physicality. Can Texas handle Washington's playmakers on the outside? That's what I question. So I got a Michigan-Washington national championship game. We'll see how it plays out. So, crazy day. In the NFL yesterday, crazy day. These last couple of weeks have been really entertaining. I will tap back in with you guys probably later this week. It'll probably be tomorrow after the college football playoff games. I'll recap that. I'll do some NFL stuff as well, like my top 10 teams and so forth. Baltimore absolutely destroyed Miami. Like, they put belt to ass to Miami. That was an ass whooping from Baltimore. They did that to back-to-back 11-win teams. That's huge. That's huge. Baltimore going into the playoffs with a lot of momentum. Baltimore and the 49ers locked up number one seed. We got so much to talk about. I'm not gonna do it all right here. Philly, huge gut-wrenching loss to Arizona at home. They essentially just gave up the number two seed to Dallas. I think Dallas essentially will go to Washington. They'll beat the Commanders, and they'll be the two seed in the NFC playoffs. We'll unravel that. Buffalo, Miami. I told you guys, it was 3 weeks ago. I think it was 3 weeks ago. I told you guys after, I was like, Buffalo is hitting their stride, and I think Buffalo, Miami, it'll come down to the last week of the season, and it'll be Sunday Night Football, Week 18. Winner wins the AFC East. And Miami, they're down spiraling. They're getting, you know, they have some unfortunate injuries at unfortunate times. I like Buffalo a lot in that matchup, so I talk about that. I just wanted to say, Lamar Jackson, because I know a lot of people still just don't want to wrap their arms around the fact that Lamar Jackson, because it looks like he's gonna probably win his second MVP after his 18 for 21. He went 18 for 21, 355, 5 touchdowns versus Miami with a perfect passer rating. That's the third time in his career he has had a perfect passer rating. And there was this national radio host. She basically has said Lamar Jackson isn't quarterbacky enough, right? He isn't quarterbacky enough. I don't know whatever the hell that means. That was like a dumb. Like, I'm usually not the one that's gonna slander other me, but that was a dumbass remark. Like, that was dumb. It was dumb. People get on these airways. They get on these mics. They get on these platforms and say whatever the hell they want to say. That was dumb. That was a dumb remark. He's not quarterbacky enough. People don't want to wrap their arms around the fact Lamar Jackson is first. He's moving into rarefied air in league history, but he is cementing himself surely as one of the best players of this generation. He is cementing himself as one of the best players of this generation. And people are just going to have to deal with that. I think for some time now, guys like Josh Allen and Joe Burrow, and not to say that these guys aren't great, because these guys are spectacular. I love Joe Burrow. I love Josh Allen. I love what they bring to the game. But I think so many times Lamar, he is so, even in the draft, like the draft process, and, you know, even his first couple of years, he was so unique at the position. And granted, we've seen guys like Michael Vick and Cam Newton, guys like that, RG3, who can just move. Like, but I feel like with certain guys, their skill sets can be so unique. Coaches, coordinators, big scouts, unique skill sets, they don't even know what to do with them. And they don't even know how to classify them. And it's so unique. When we see certain unique skill sets, it leads to people and it leads to us labeling and classifying it something that it's actually not, but it's just so unique. We can't even find the right terminology and the right thing to call it. And with Lamar Jackson, he's always been unique, and he has a unique skill set. And I feel like it over the years, it has polished up, and his skills have become more refined. And he looks so comfortable in the pocket. And he's showing you the different type of throws he can make. But I think a lot of people, they haven't quite wrapped their arms around it, because we're running with certain notions and narratives. He can't do this, he can't do that, and he's this and he's that. And we're so in awe of his athletic ability, we just tend to forget that, like, when we see him make certain throws, we don't even acknowledge it. But if other guys made such throws, it would break the internet. So like I said, no shade, no shots to Josh Allen or Joe Burrow. But Lamar Jackson, if he wins this year's MVP, he'll be joining a list of all-time greats that essentially are first ballot Hall of Famers. Let me read you the guys that have won multiple NFL MVPs. Jim Brown. I think you may know of him. Johnny Unitas, he was pretty great. Kurt Warner, Steve Young, Joe Montana, Brett Favre, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Patrick Mahomes. All of those guys are either first ballot Hall of Famers or soon to be first ballot Hall of Famers. Tom Brady, his career will be in the Hall sooner than later. Aaron Rodgers, whenever he decides to retire, he'll be in the Hall. Patrick Mahomes has, in his early years, he has cemented himself amongst one of the best players in league history. He'll be in the Hall. And if Lamar Jackson wins two MVPs, and if he's able to close out, like the Ravens seem destined to get to the Super Bowl, if he's able to close out and he's able to win it all this year, there's no more arguing it. There's no more disputing it. He is Lamar Jackson, and I'm saying it right now, he'll probably win his second MVP. He is cementing himself as one of the best players in this generation and one of the best players in league history. Facts. Like it or not, he is doing that as we are speaking. He is doing that. He is cementing himself amongst a pantheon of all-time great legends, and he is cementing and still writing his story. I mean, we tried to push Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and we Mahomes is obviously the top guy. But soon after that, people talk about Josh Allen, people talk about Joe Burrow. And respectfully, those guys are great, and I understand it. But they don't have a unanimous MVP. Hell, they don't have an MVP to begin with. Those guys, Lamar Jackson's won 70% of his games. You know, we talk about Lamar and his style of play and how sustainable that is. Well, Joe Burrow, this is now two significant injuries in 4 years. Is his style of play conducive? Who knows? I don't know. I don't know how these careers are going to pan out. But I do know we got to start, like, people got to start wrapping their arms around Lamar Jackson. And when we're having this Mahomes and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow conversation, Lamar Jackson is well in that conversation. And he's putting himself amongst the conversation of the best players in this generation and an all-time great NFL player. He's putting himself in that rarefied air. With the way he's playing, if the Ravens do what they're supposed to do, I see no reason why they can't get to the Super Bowl and win it all. Point blank, period. But I catch you guys on the flip side. Just wanted to talk about that. I catch you guys on the flip side. After the bowl game, after the playoff games, I debunk it, I react to it, and I'll give you some of my thoughts for the NFL Week 17 and going into Week 18. Always remember, two choices, one decision. I bid you guys adieu. Enjoy the games. Enjoy the new year. First day of January, first day of the year. Always remember, two choices, one decision. I already said that. I'm sorry. Peace, deuces. I am out.